here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stoned, immaculate.
Hello and welcome. This is the C86 show. I'm David Eastall. As you know, we love a special guest. This week, it's going to be the turn of Justin Armitage, who I spoke to very recently. To find out more about life, love, poetry, and all that other groovy stuff, has been in lots of bands. She's a sort of songwriter, composer, performer, and lots of other things. Music bands that she's been part of: Gretchen Hofner, The Cesareans, worked with Bader Meinhof, well, Luke Haynes in Bader Meinhof, and is now currently recruited into the stable that is Miranda Sex Garden, as various playing different instruments. And also during the interview, she was in Christian Death, which I hadn't realised beforehand. But anyway, exciting stuff. And so, after several minutes of interesting, slightly casual chat, we get down to that exciting subject that was the early formative years. Justin, it's over to you.
I studied music from a young age, and I think I went down a totally different route. I was Miss Classical.
Yes.
My dad was a jazz musician, so of course I rebelled against all jazz for ages. I love it now, but I rebelled against it at the time. Didn't know anything about pop music until I was about 15, and I went from being totally immersed in classical music. I mean, probably Beethoven's Ninth or something like that was like my go-to record.
Yes.
And then punk came along, and I was like, oh, okay, there's something here for me. And I loved that energy. I'd been trained to with an inch of my life.
Yes.
And then I just threw it all away. I went, that tune's going to be in a punk band now.
God, that's quite exciting. Well, who was your dad, actually? What was he a well-known jazz player or just somebody who...
In an underground sort of way, he was quite well-known. He was called Johnny Armitage, and he's a drummer.
Right.
Yeah, I looked at when he died, I kind of inherited all these old melody makers and NMEs, and there was all this sort of stuff about him in there, and he was having a battle with another band and they were bitching about each other. And it was like, oh wow, this happened in the 50s and 60s and it happened in the 80s, you know. It was like blurring.
Yes. There was a very famous event was in the late 50s, I think, the Battle of Booley, wasn't there? This kind of jazz festival that suddenly kicked off, and there was a mini riot between the trad jazzers and modern jazz fans. And, you know, there was a great bit of, there's a little clip of a BBC presenter talking about having 5 microphones stolen. I mean, this was like, you know, anarchy had broken out, and you know, chairs had been literally pushed over, and, you know, violence had happened at the Battle of Booley. So it was quite famous. So people get very tetchy at any age, don't they, really? We just think that if you're 16, you always think you've just discovered something new, but it's all been done before, hasn't it, really? Yeah. But yes, I've interviewed quite a few musicians who were like, yes, I learnt the oboe, which wasn't terribly a good instrument, but, you know, had that classical background, and then suddenly you thought, yes, and now I want to be in a band. Like, there was a band, was it Dream Academy? There was a woman, Kate St. John, and then there was Helen O'Hara, who went into Dexys, and they both came from classical sort of, the classical world, and then sort of found themselves with a band and sort of been on top of the pops and went, that's it.
I was very lucky. I was very lucky because of Paul Hofner, actually, and Gretchen Hofner. And I joined that band to play the violin, and I played violin in punk bands for years. And then he went, but Justin, I'm really a piano player. And I'm like, why aren't you playing the piano? I'm like, because there's no music and I don't know how to do it. And he sort of sat me down and went, we'll play an A minor chord. You know what that is. I went, oh God, yeah. It just like took someone for me to join the dots. And then I kind of went, oh yeah, I can do this. Yeah, I do know how to do this.
Yes. So I felt, mainly because I was born in the countryside of East Anglia, punk really didn't happen in this area at all. It was more status quo and heavy metal and things like that. So punk, and I felt always too young for punk. But were you in London at the time when...
I was in Outer London. Yeah, I grew up in Outer London.
Right, so that had a bit more of an impact. So when you got to that big age of 16, which was in your case 1982, 1972, you know, did you then go on to college at that point, or had you already?
No, the plan was I was going to music school, and I just at the 11th hour went, no, I'm not. I'm just going to join a punk band and sign on the dole. And my mum thought it was the end of the world. But,
yes.
But it was fine because what, you know, I did what I needed to do at that age. And then I kind of went, actually, I'm a bit bored of being in a punk band. So what do I want to do next? And then I kind of worked my way through. I mean, I taught music. I still teach music now, but, and I love teaching. But then I worked, I could do this and be in bands and I could write my own music as well. So it all sort of made sense.
It's yes. So because I think one of the reasons there's so many bands in the 80s was the good old Thatcher scheme of the Unemployment and Job Seekers Allowance and Enterprise Allowance schemes, which suddenly created a massive, you know, world of indie pop bands. And also at that point, you know, if you were left to centre, it felt like there was no future because, you know, things weren't going terribly well and there was going to be a nuclear war, so what the hell? So yeah. Signing on didn't seem like a bad thing to do, and it felt like you were somehow kicking against authority and trying to bring down, you know, the man and capitalism, but, you know, with the £38 cheque. So then how did you sort of navigate from the 80s onwards, apart from being in a few bands and teaching music?
I didn't really. Things just evolved and... And they're pretty much the same now. I mean, you know, people ask me to come and play with them in their bands, like Miranda Sex Garden. I've been a really old friend of Catherine's. So, you know, she needed a keyboard player. So she's, Justin, will you do it? I usually always say no, but, you know, I haven't got anything that pressing on at the moment. Like, you know what? Come on then. Yeah, let's go and do a tour. And we're probably going to go and do an album as well after that.
Yes.
It's been that story from, you know, ever I started. That once you play in one band, particularly with a violin, so because there weren't that many violinists about, then someone go, oh, I want a violin on my record. And then they, you know, they go, oh, well, I used her.
Yes.
And I think the classical training was good because I could write my own parts in a way, and I could write string sections, you know, in a way that, oh, I just want a string section on it. But it was like, well, what are the notes? You know, because the classical players have to have the notes, you know,
they're yes.
not make it up on the spot. And I could do that. So I kind of facilitated that. So I think that was how I got in. But really it's just word of mouth. I mean, you know, I really haven't evolved that far. I've moved a few miles east and I'm just still playing bands. I love it.
Yes.
It's sort of what I do. And I don't really care about being rich or famous. I just like playing music and music that I like. So.
Because I was going to say in the 80s, there was all these different tribes and, well, I say tribes, but different scenes, weren't there? And then there was a sort of a change as the late 80s progressed. The world of ecstasy came along and then there was yeah. that dance scene and then was the Seattle grunge scene and there was a bit of a techno house scene. But then the 90s, and you mentioned the violin, and there were suddenly bands on Top of the Pops and they was, you know, mostly playing pretty standard rock or pop, you know, indie pop stuff that would have not really been much, you know, wouldn't have been on Top of the Pops the decade before. But then they all wanted a little bit of an orchestral touch, didn't they? So was the 90s your decade, so to speak?
No, I don't think I mean, to a degree, because I was the right age, I suppose. But I've been pretty massively unsuccessful in every decade. But I'm sort of still here, still plugging away and do, you know, doing other people's music, doing a bit of my music. The 90s was a really good time. I think I was doing Gretchen Hofner then, and I think one of the bands, I worked with Luke Haynes on an album, and I really loved that, and that was really good.
Is this the Bader Meinhof?
The Bader Meinhof thing. I thought he was one of the most talented people, just like a super clever person.
Yes, I interviewed him last week with his new book, Freaks.
Yeah.
And yes, he's very engaging and very funny, isn't he?
He's fantastic. And he's so original. His music, I just think it's like, I don't know how he thinks of it, you know, and I don't know where it comes from. But I find it, you know, I find him quite fascinating. Gretchen Hofner was great because it was sort of alternative, but it kind of encompassed a bit of everything, but with a sense of humour. I always felt we always had a sense of humour in that band, so I always loved that band.
Yes. So were you with those two bands? Were they the first two that had sort of got recording contracts and had sort of?
There was a few little tiny bands on little tiny labels, you know, that I did bits and bobs for. God knows who.
Because was there a band you did in the sort of 80s called In Excelsis? Was this one of yours?
Oh, yeah, I did work with them. God, I forgot. Yes, they were one of the tiny bands, yeah.
Well, they were on Jungle Records, weren't they? And they did an album called Prey. That was in the mid-80s.
Yeah, yeah, so I think I was on that.
And you recorded that one. Yes, I've been listening to all this. I thought, oh, you'll be. Yes. Yeah. That was exciting. But then, yeah, so that's why I was wondering if the 90s was particularly sort of fruitful, because you were... So were you more of a member of Gretchen and Hofner than the Bader-Meinhof, or were you both ensconced in the sort of the making of both of those kind of moments?
I was a proper member of Gretchen Hofner. Me, Paul and I kind of wrote together, and I were... It was his band, but I was like a proper member of that. Whereas Bader-Meinhof, I got pulled in. I got pulled in because it was secret at the time, and they just wanted someone to come. It was secret from the record company, and then eventually the record company got to know about it and put it out. But that was just a project, really. That was an album and then a small tour. I think we did a few gigs.
Yes. I can't remember, but do you appear in his other book that he did about Britpop,
I read one book and I wasn't in it, but my mate who lives two boats down, Phil Vinyl, he did a lot of work with him, and he produced Bader-Meinhof. He was in it quite a lot, and he was like, I'm in it. I'm like, I don't think I was there. I was sort of vaguely mentioned once, I think.
Yes. I know, there you go. So how long did Gretchen and Hofner sort of last for? Was that, did you do one album on Poppy Records?
We did do a second album, but it all imploded. Poppy Records imploded.
Right.
I think it was run by a slightly dodgy guy.
Yes, these things do happen, don't they?
Yeah.
Was that Todd Taylor?
It was Todd Taylor. Bloody hell, you're like an encyclopedia.
Oh, Taylor. Right. Oh, yes, I know, because in the 80s, being on the indie label always seemed like a good idea, but then they were just as bad as the majors, apart from had less money.
Yeah.
So there you go. So, yeah, so what was your experience of, how did you become the support act for My Life Story during that period?
Simply that Paul and Jake were really good friends and been good friends for years, and I think it was literally that. And they sort of loved each other. They loved what each other did, and they just thought, yeah, I think it was just, yeah, this will be fun. Let's go and do some gigs together.
There was definitely a bit of a scene, wasn't there? Because there's another band called, is it Flame and Stars, who've just had an album out. The guy from,
does sound familiar, yeah.
Oh, yes, this is one of those bands, Flame and Stars, with a guy called Max.
Right.
I don't know. A lot of people were going for a slightly gothic, seedy vibe, weren't they? That was a bit of a sort of thing in the 90s, I think. You know,
yeah.
A bit sort of...
My top favourite person was Nick Cave. I think might be still is overall. I sort of loved the Birthday Party. I had a sort of fixation with them for years.
So yes.
I was down at... Slightly gothy, but really full-on, intense kind of thing. I went for.
There's a very good article in today's Guardian about Nick, well, not about him, a good interview with Nick trying to explain a few things and his latest art project. I think he's had two of his sons have died, which is a bit unusual, isn't it?
So, yeah.
Not the easiest of lives. So, So what happens then sort of as that was the John Major years, wasn't it? The great John Major years before Team Tony and New. So what happens then after that band implodes?
Well, Gretchen Hofner So I was sort of jobbing musician, but my love was Gretchen Horner. So when you're a jobbing musician, you always have this constant, you work for free because they can't pay you. No one's got any money. But then some other bands will pull you in for a bit of recording or something, so you can have money that way. And while I was in Gretchen Horner, I remember it being a bit of a sore point because I went off. Christian Death came along.
Oh, God, Christian Death.
Are an appalling band, I would like to say. I went off for a year on tour with them, and we toured everywhere.
Was Geeta in the band at that stage?
Was in the band, yeah.
Yes.
Maybe not for all of it, actually. But, yeah, it was some of the best times in my life and some of the worst. But
yes.
An experience, but I was constantly flying back and trying to do a Gretchen Horner gig here and there and stay in that band. They got a dep in for me and it was all a bit arguey. But yeah, I did that for quite a while. And then imploded. Valor's a bit like, he's a bit like Thingy out of The Fall. You know, The Fall is, no one can work with him. It's just like he just gets one band in after another because he just falls out with everyone.
Yes, this is true. So the Christian Death period, which I kind of was a bit confused the other day, because so was Ross Williams the main man at that stage?
No, he wasn't there then. No.
So that was Valor was the main man.
Valor was there. Oh. And then really it was a bunch of session musicians like me.
Yes.
Really. What I learned about that was how devoted fans are. Like, they followed us from country to country. And I'm like, well, I'm just hired on. I'm not really, you know, anyone in this band. But people would start obsessing, you know, and follow me around and give me presents all the time. It was like, oh, this is a bit odd.
Yes.
Maybe it's just Christian Death bands. I don't know.
I would imagine, I don't know, there is something. Yeah, I'd sort of, because of doing an interview with Geeta, I sort of was listening to some of their music and lyrics and thinking, oh, it's very interesting. But again, a 16-year-old might get a bit more carried away than an old man like me, just thinking, yeah, nice tunes, interesting lyrics, interesting sort of sentiment here. But yes, you have to sort of divide. So that was the kind of the 90s, there's a year in the 90s with Christian Death.
Yes.
How did they discover you, by the way, as you're definitely not in America?
One of those, I think, through playing the violin. We initially, they wanted us, so I had a little string trio that we used to, a viola player, me on violin and a cellist, and we used to try and drum up business by sort of hiring ourselves out to play on records or whatever. And I think Bala heard about this. We had an advert up somewhere or something, and he asked us, he wanted us to do this incredibly pretentious sort of opening act for him. Dry ice and strings and, you know, sort of over the topness. And we started by doing that, and we did that in some London shows. And then he sort of went, I'm quite useful in the band. I'm cheap because I can do backing vocals, keyboards and violin for the price of one, you know?
Yes, so three in one.
It's really unromantic to talk about, but that is actually what, you know, what's going on in people's minds. It's like, oh, yeah, if we get her on the keyboards as well, we don't have to pay anyone else, you know? It's like, so I ended up sort of being in the band all the time, you know?
And right.
String trio.
Because around that time they had an album, was it Prophecies, and then Pornographic Messiah, obviously.
God, I can't remember. I didn't listen to any of it. I just learned the songs I needed to, and that was it. I just couldn't even tell you what they were called anymore.
So did you go around America as well as elsewhere?
A little bit around America.
And very devoted fans.
Very devoted fans all around Europe and all around America. Well, America actually not so much. But Europe, definitely.
That must have been very exciting. Yes.
It was interesting. You know, I learned a lot.
Well, you've got to do these things, haven't you? So that's all good stuff. And survive them. I know Geeta's lovely. She's doing a sort of solo project. Well, not a solo, a duo project at the moment. And
yes, I did a few years ago, I did a little bit of recording with her.
Yes. I think she was one of the people around the Joshua Tree, actually.
Yeah.
I seem to remember. So then, yes, after your Christian... So then, God, you were swinging in both camps, which is very true. Did then both of them come to an end and then it was like, right, next project?
Yeah, I drifted about a bit. And then, I met my partner at the time. He's a singer.
Was a project called Jennifer Lee Potter? Was that a project you did?
Oh, no, that was with Paul. I did work with Jennifer, we called her. Yeah, I did work with her a bit, but that was with Paul. Paul died. Things changed. And then I ended up, it took a while, but I ended up going, I'm going to do my own band. I'm sick of this. I'm going to be the boss. And so then I married someone who could front it. So I was like, you're going to be the front person, which is always the hardest thing.
And yes.
Between us, we sort of concocted this, you know, worked out what we were going to do and went and did that for 10 years or more, 10 years maybe, yeah.
Oh, what was this what was this band called?
So this is called the Caesareans.
Right, yeah. So this is much more of a bigger combo, isn't it? So there's people like Beverly, Budge, Charlene, Christine, Ed, Jan, Susie, and yourself.
There were different, quite a few different people in it over the years, but Charlie and me were the sort of, we wrote it and it was our baby, if you like, and it was our thing. And so we did that for, toured a lot in Europe. It went well in Europe.
Yes. Oh, often I find that that a band can be very popular in somewhere like Italy or Spain. Some reason they get very kind of, yes, one particular country will take to him. What country did you find was particularly fond of you?
Actually, weirdly, Italy, France, to the point where I nearly moved to France. I thought, this is it. This is where I should be. They love
yes.
me. It's like, I should be here. But it didn't happen in the end. But I think the reason Catherine always said from around the Sex Garden, the Caesareans are my favourite live band. Will you come? You know, when she wanted me to come and play keyboard, she said, come on. The last year, she said, will you play with us? And I'm like, we don't exist anymore, Catherine. We'll never. She said, oh, go on, reform and play. I'm like, it's not going to happen. But, so I think that's why she sort of came to me and to join Miranda Sex Garden, you know. It's
because yes. She's
seen me a lot in the Caesareans.
Well, I think there was a guy called, there was a British band called Shelly Ann Orphan. I think they're big in Italy. And also an Australian band who might, one of the members might have been in the Bad Seeds called Hugo Race. He seems to be...
he was Bad Seeds, yeah.
And yes, he's always doing projects in Italy and he's even got a house in Italy as well because the Italians love Hugo. So yes, yeah. It's kind of interesting. So with all your music, is it always a case of like doing the... tutoring and you know the kind of teaching as a sort of the sort of day job and then sort of doing the bands and playing live as your sort of evening and sort of nighttime kind of setup.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's it. Do you sort of have a particular studio that you work in or anything like that?
Well, it's my boat. Yes,
it's called
this boat I'm on now is kind of my studio. And then I have another boat where I sort of sleep.
Yes, it's good to have.
And eat and sleep and live the rest of the time. But, worked out that I make a lot of noise a lot of the time and it's very hard to live with me. And I also, I have a little acoustic band called The Deviation at the moment, and they come and rehearse on my boat, and it doesn't work with other people that you live with. You have to kind of, you need your space. It's too annoying, I think.
Yes, it would be.
You know, I want to sit and play piano in the morning. I can if I have my boat here.
Yeah. So when did you decide to become a boat person? Was that over 20 years ago then?
Yeah. Well, when I was with my last partner, Charlie, who was a singer, we got a mortgage. I really resisted. We got a mortgage. We both worked like crazy to pay this bloody mortgage and realised, oh, hang on, we have a... This is the wrong way round. We don't mind being poor, but we want to be able to do the bands, you know. And so we went, okay, how can we change this? Oh, you know, living on a boat's really cheap. So that's basically, living on a boat is really cheap compared to living in a flat.
Yes.
Also, you can make as much noise as you like whenever you like. So it kind of just makes total sense to me.
This is it. And there's quite a few musicians, mostly, I don't know, there's one of the members who was in the original setup of, I always mispronounce it badly, in Streisand Neubarten, one of those bands, yeah, the German band. Yeah. And I remember him and his partner, who just brought an album out last year, they also thought, look, what's most important thing in our life? It's music and creativity. So we don't want any more property. We're just going to become sort of like nomads making music and putting it out there, because that's all we're going to be interested in, and forget property and debt. So yeah. It's a courageous thing to do. So, yes, it's good. And then so with Miranda Sex Garden, they reformed a few years ago, didn't they, with this kind of wave of, I don't know.
It was just last year, wasn't it? Was it last time they reformed? Or the year
I think before? They played a one-off or a couple of dates
right. One
summer in that, shall we do it? It's been a long time and probably who will care? And I think it was successful. And I've, you know, I haven't, it's not a great theory, but I think there's a certain passing of time where, I don't know, people get a little bit curious and a bit interested to see what it's like again. And it's a tricky one because, in a way, it's not necessarily about rose-tinted sunglasses and sort of reliving one's youth. It's just like, actually, this has been quite fun, and actually some of the music's good, and some of the people that we can still bear to be in the same room with, some not, we could still make a sound. And actually that back catalogue is much better than I remember, but I haven't played it for 20 or 30 years because I've been emotionally slightly avoiding it. But now I've faced it, it's quite nice. And I think, yeah, so I think Catherine, she's had the Medieval Babes, hasn't she, which has been incredibly successful as an ongoing concern, a few other projects. And I think it was a summer where she had a few dates, and it was like people have come from all over the country, if not Europe, to see us. And then they reformed kind of more serious last year, and they had a different keyboard player, didn't they, Elvin?
Emmett, he's called.
Emmett, that's it.
He's amazing. He puts out his own music, actually. He puts out his albums. He worked with Carvis. I don't know which. I think he played in Knife World. Carvis is the guitar player.
Yes.
He's in every band. He's like the world's busiest guitar player. So and Emmett came through that, I think. But Emmett does his own stuff too. Is that we all sort of, if you've been around long enough, you all sort of know each other vaguely, you know. We'll have, like, I know people that's worked with Emmett, and, you know, and he was there for a bit.
And then he moved. Yeah, because I think there's another little scene, but they're probably a bit older and are probably not so able to do it now. But there was a scene around, was it Danielle Dax and Lemon Kitten and Swell Maps and all that kind of scene. And I think they were sort of interchanging very rapidly with different lineups, but probably now got to an age where, I don't know, they've probably got more hospital appointments than, you know, live dates on their calendar. They probably think it's hard. It's a strange one getting a bit older, because one's calendar starts shifting in its sort of like appointments to medical appointment, you know. Medical.
I haven't got that yet.
Oh, you've still got
it. It will happen.
Yes. So with Miranda Sex Garden, then, you've got some live dates, and then you're going into the studio, did you say, to record a new album?
Yeah, that's the plan. About to embark on a tour, just rehearsing for the tour now. Made a video. We're going to put out a single, the single's great because Catherine resurrected some old recording, a bit of old recording that pretty much everyone has played on. Ben Golemstock, who was the original person on guitar and keyboards, was playing on it, and he's since died. But everybody's been on it. And then Catherine went, I've got to have you on it now, Justin. I'm like, you don't need any more keyboards on it, Catherine. She went, I do. I want you on it as well. So I can do it. Right, you can play a little bit on that bit. So we've all, everyone who's ever been in Miranda's Sex Garden, basically alive or dead, is on this single.
Oh, wow. So, what's the single called, by the way?
It's going to be called Velventine.
Right. So this is quite a significant symbolic kind of track for Catherine.
Yeah, it's like she said, we actually wrote it over 20 years ago and it just sort of sat, you know, on some computer somewhere. And she sort of resurrected the old recording, got done new recordings with it, and has been, you know, trying to mix it. I think it's been quite difficult, but I think they've got there now. She said to me, I saw it yesterday, and she said, I think we've nailed it now.
It's a very productive time, isn't it? Everyone's sort of got an urgency in the air of making things happen.
Yeah, after COVID, I mean, there was a few people that did really well in COVID and went, oh, no, I can sit at home and make music. Most of us didn't. Most of us sat there and were depressed as hell because we couldn't play. You know, it's like...
Yes.
It was a really... It psychologically damaged quite a lot of people. I think the musicians that are used to going out to play, it was just like, I can't even play, just rehearse with my friends. You know, I can't do anything. So I think after that, this is the aftermath. It's everyone's like, come on, we've got to get out there again and keep going until we drop, you know, literally.
Yes,
I feel like I had too many, you know, I had too long off and I needed a reason to go out there again.
I think it's a bit like the Joni Mitchell song, wasn't it? You don't know what you've got until it's gone.
Yeah.
And it's like we took everything for granted and then went, no, this is a disaster. I think the only people who quite enjoyed the COVID, and it was only the first year, were the people who the year before had done the album, the tour, and were thinking, right, I'm having next year to recover and write some new material. But I spoke to a lot of people who were just built up to the album and the tour, and it was like
we had just the cesareans. I'd sweated blood over the third album. I'd made the album I wanted finally, and we were booked to play Europe in April, and then lockdown happened in March, and I was just like, oh, you know, once you can't tour the album, it's hardly any point releasing it. Really, it's like you can't do anything. You can't get any publicity around it. And I think we all just gave up the ghost. That was our last thing, project, and it just died. And it was really sad, you know, like it just sort of fizzled out.
Oh my God, that's terrible. Because this was on Glass Modern Records as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it just, there was other problems too. There was another problem between me and the singer because I was married to the singer and then I wasn't married to the singer. But it could have kept going, but it just got too difficult. And between the lockdown, and we did do a lockdown show, actually, which was really odd.
Yes, I know.
We were allowed to have six people spaced at intervals as the audience. We were at the Water Rats, and it was like, this is just bizarre.
Yeah, there was a few of those, actually, weren't there? Yes.
It didn't feel right.
So this was the album Rachel Frieda.
Yeah.
Yes. God, that's so sad, isn't it? Do you think that was at the end of the band?
That was the end of the band, really. And maybe that was fine. Maybe we had said what we need. You know, we said what we needed to say somehow.
Yeah. It's a bit. It's a bit traumatic. If you could have whispered something to your 16-year-old self starting out in the interesting and creative world of music in 1982, what would you have? Is there anything in particular that you would have thought? Oh yes, that would have been a good idea. If only, you probably wouldn't have listened. But
don't have a relationship with the lead singer is what I would have whispered to myself.
Yes,
I was warned, and I still did it.
I know. Well, there's always the, well, yes, this one will be different, won't it? We won't have the usual problems.
Yeah.
But it does kind of happen. And then do you still kind of keep your teaching and tutoring going as well as being in these other musical combos?
Yeah, I'm still teaching. In fact, I've just taught 7 piano lessons in a row.
Oh my God, you must be absolutely frazzled.
I love it, you know, I love it. I really like it. I get, you know, I try to make everybody write stuff, and we all, you know, everyone does a bit of classical, a bit of jazz, a bit of pop music, try writing a bit, you know, try to do the whole, and when someone does something, you know, I had a 17-year-old in here earlier writing, she's like, I want to make my song more jazzy, and she's writing a great song, you know, and she just wants someone, she doesn't want to be a musician really, she just wants to do it, and I'm like, fine, you know, this is, you don't have to always have this thing in music where, like, you have to be fantastic and strive and be ambitious. You can just do it because it's great doing it.
Yes, absolutely. And have you started archiving all your work, that the bits and pieces that you've done to...
Absolutely not. I will never do that. I'll always... It will be one of those things I intend to, but it will never happen.
Do you have a Bandcamp page? Do you sort of put anything on Bandcamp?
No. No, I haven't even thought about it. I'm hopeless. I'm hopeless with technology. I just can't be interested in it enough.
I just think,
oh, God, really? Hopefully, maybe someone might do that for me one day, but it won't be me. I'll just be sitting noodling at the piano and letting someone else get on with that.
Yes. I guess with your sort of musical palette, you have managed to sort of slip into a lot of different bands and be able to sort of pick up, because Miranda Sexgarden has got such an interesting sort of different style on every album that they've done.
Yeah.
So do you find that kind of interesting? Is that quite an interesting challenge?
Most bands, I'll have worked out every song in the set, you know, in a couple of hours, pretty much, you know, got the gist of it. Miranda Sexgarden, oh my God. You know, I know the band. In fact, weirdly, in the 90s at some point, I actually auditioned as a violin player for them, and me and Catherine had both completely forgotten this, and then suddenly remembered that had actually happened. And then I went off and played with a French singer instead of joining them. But, that was one of them. And Pigalle, that was another little escapade in my life. Miranda Sexgarden, trying to learn those songs, they are the most complicated songs I've ever come across. They're like, what the hell? And it's taken me, you know, a good few months. It's taken me a good two and a half to 3 months now.
Yes.
3 months to actually go, bloody hell, I think I've nailed it. They're complex in a way that most bands aren't that complicated, that they do all sorts of tricky things they don't realize they're doing, I think.
Yes.
Maybe they do. I don't know.
It's interesting. Yeah, but I think she has such an interesting background, doesn't she, as well? What sort of people turn up to a Miranda Sexgarden concert? Are they original fans, or have they started picking up a whole new wave of people who are curious with the sort of the band?
I'm not sure, because I haven't done a show with them yet.
Right.
But I did see a gig in Colchester last year. And there were a lot of, I think, old fans, and there were quite a few curious people as well who did, I don't think knew the band, but were quite curious to find out who they were.
Yes.
But there's a lot of people, pretty much everyone I've talked to know who they are, who have definitely heard of them, and like, oh yeah, I definitely know that name, you know.
Yes. It's interesting, isn't it? Yes, well, that'd be good. Well, look, thank you ever so much for giving me the time for this. This has been amazing. And if you want, I can always, send you the link, and then you can always put it on any of your social media platform sites. And will you be doing any European dates this year with the band?
Absolutely, yes. So we're starting on the 7th of May in London at the Garage, and then literally getting in a van and driving for 2 days to a festival in Spain,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going straight on. I mean, I'm not sure how many dates it is, but it's maybe 10 to 14 dates all around Europe. So we're doing Paris, Brussels, Holland, Germany, I don't know where else. It's a proper, you know, full-on European tour.
My God, you'll be absolutely exhausted, won't you?
Yes, but it will be a lot of fun.
It will be amazing. God, yes. Well, I have to try and... Well, I remember you coming down to Colchester or coming up to Colchester last year, but yes. So, yeah, you've got a whole European gig and then Hebden Bridge.
We've got some more in around England as well. I think Hebden Bridge. Where else?
That's right. Bristol, Birmingham.
That's it. There's a few in England as well.
Yes, my God.
So I'm really looking forward to it. A bit scary playing the garage as your first gig, but I shall rise to the challenge.
Oh, interesting enough. I just realised your special guest at the garage is that, you know, I just mentioned about the bloke who was in the Alexander Hack or Hacky.
Yeah.
And his partner, they were the ones who I did an interview, and they were the ones who said, oh, we decided we wanted to not have property and put our money into sort of making music. So funny enough, yes, it's them. So they'll be, yes, that's kicking off at the garage on the 7th. God, that's going to be a very interesting gig, isn't it?
Hopefully. I think it will be, yeah. I'm really looking forward to it anyway.
Yeah. And that, dear listener, is the end of the interview. A massive thank you to Justin Armitage for giving me the time for that interview. And as we were talking about Miranda Sex Garden, you can find out more about their current activities on various social media sites, Facebook, I think Instagram as well. They probably have a website. If I find it, I'll put it in the notes below. This has been the C86 Show, David Eastall. If you want to contact me, you can on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and all these interviews have been archived. So, yes, fill your boots. Have a great week. Stay safe.